Today is the start of Banned Book Week. No, that doesn't mean it's a week to go out and get books banned. Enough of that going on already here in New Jersey and elsewhere in America. It's a time to recognize what book banning inflicts on us as a society which at least claims to be pro-education and inclusive. Denying access to legitimate information denies not just the opportunity for education, but understanding others in our community as well. My first guest today is here to examine this issue and how it's endangering the work and even the existence of your local school and public library. He is the Associate Director of Every Library, Peter Bromberg. Thank you for being here today, Peter.
Oh, thanks, Chris, for having me. Appreciate it.
Trio of websites for you. We do have them on our homepage as well, but just to place them in your ears, everylibrary.org, saveschoollibrarians.org, and fightforthefirst.org. And again, they're on the homepage as well. They'll be very useful if you are a part of an organized library of any size, shape, or form. But Peter, when we look at book bans and the attacks that libraries are facing for, I guess they call it the culture wars, it seems like the heat has turned up on these libraries lately.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, over the past probably year and a half, 2 years, there's been just a huge increase in the number of challenges, censorship, both at the local level, at school libraries, at public libraries, and also at the state level with what we would call anti-access legislation that's designed to either criminalize librarianship or make it more difficult for Americans to access materials on certain topics or viewpoints.
With the challenges that libraries face, funding, I guess, is the first and foremost. It just seems amazing to me, at least, that local officials don't understand the importance and the value of a local library. But now we've seen cases where that funding is weaponized against the library. Do what the minority want them to do, or else, well, your funding just might be reduced. Or just saw recently an attempt in that one small town in Texas. They were talking about just yanking all the funding from the local library.
That's correct, and that's Llano, Texas, where, in fact, the county commissioners voted yesterday to keep the library open after a court order. They had pulled a bunch of books that were specifically related to LGBTQ authors and viewpoints, and they had pulled those books for that reason, which is a First Amendment violation. So it went to court. They were sued. The judge ruled, no, you have to put the books on the shelf, and the county commissioners gave serious thought to, well, if we have to have books on the shelf that we don't like, we're just going to defund the library. Luckily, or happily, after a organized community outcry of people who support the First Amendment and want access to books in their community, put pressure on the commission, and they voted unanimously to keep the library open. We haven't seen, we've seen in Michigan, a library has been defunded because of books on the shelf. Again, people's objections to materials related to LGBTQ authors' viewpoints. We've also seen that in some other states. But, yeah, increasingly we're seeing more activities along those lines of either defunding libraries or trying to change the laws around how libraries are governed so that, library governance boards could be taken over or packed, and changing policies. So there's a whole bunch of different ways in which people are attempting to corrupt the mission of the public library, which is so damaging for our local communities, right?
And you mentioned, too, the Texas Library, the books being objected to just weren't for the LGBTQ-oriented books. There were some books about the history of racism, the KKK,
right.
Obviously not supportive of the KKK, was revealing their true horrors. And, I mean, this is me talking. So it sounds like when someone objects to books like that, it makes me think, is that hitting too close to home for somebody in your past or something? I also know something too, Peter, with the Texas case and with what every library was recently involved with in Glen Ridge, New Jersey. When it came time to put up, the people behind the bans shut up. In Texas, for example, the defendants never appeared for deposition, so they're facing a situation of a legal nature. And with Glen Ridge, again, when the public hearing came about to decide about six books, whether they stay or go, the organization of, I think, all of eight people, none of them were there for the hearing, were they?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. And again, so much of this, there's that old saying, all politics is local. And so because libraries and school districts are operated and funded locally, we see so many different flavors of what's happening across the country right now. There is a commonality here. And I'm glad you mentioned, though, that it's not just LGBTQ books that are being banned and challenged. Pen America last year did a study of what was being challenged and pulled from school library shelves and found that 41% of the books had protagonists and prominent characters who were people of color. 22% of the books were specifically about race and racism. I mean, 16% of the books were history books or biographies. And then there's also a lot of children's books, you know, that tend to be biographies of people like Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King Jr., Ruby Bridges. So there is this, you know, this mix of objections to books by and about people of color, as well as, you know, books by and about people who are in the LGBTQ community. So that's really a commonality we're seeing, regardless of the tactics being used. But that's, you know, that's what they're going, that's what they're targeting.
And some of these books that are targeted too makes me question whether or not these people actually get past the book title before they raise their objections. It makes me think of a friend that I have who is a devout hardcore feminist who despises the old Jackie Gleason show, The Honeymooners. Her reasoning being that, well, it shows Alice in this subservient role, even though that was a sign of the times. It's a bunch of years ago. She's completely glossing over the fact that at the end of pretty much every episode, Alice always wound up being right and Ralph was always the schmuck.
Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting when you talk about people, you know, maybe don't get past the cover, because in many libraries across the country, it's very standard to have a policy that says, well, if someone, you know, somebody wants to challenge a material, there's mechanisms, and this has been in place for 100 years, right, for libraries, and it's worked well, where someone could say, I don't think that book should be on the shelf because, or more frequently, I don't think that book should be in the children's section, it should be in the adult, or it should be in the YA. And those policies generally require that the book is read as a whole, right? And this is some good news, is that in many, particularly school districts around the country, what we see is that when parents come together on committees and actually read the book as a whole, very frequently, surprisingly frequently, the parents who are perhaps against the books initially because of some excerpts taken out of context read the book and say, oh, no, we're not going to pull that. That was actually like a very valuable piece of literature, right? That was for, you know, that just because it might have had some mention of sex on page 73, in context, it was something that was, you know, constructive, not destructive. It was something that was helpful and appropriate for the age group. Whereas, you know, taking 100 excerpts out of context and putting them into one document may not be something that is age appropriate, right? But in context, absolutely age appropriate.
Talking with Peter Bromberg, Associate Director of Every Library. Everylibrary.org is their website. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. When you look at the stats, Peter, this was from the American Library Association. 2022, 1,269 censor demands of library books, nearly double the year before, 2021. Probably that number will increase as we go through the last half of 2023, no doubt. So what does every library do to further empower the libraries to withstand the onslaught that they've been facing?
Sure. It's a great question. And I want to stress that we're working not just with libraries, librarians, library boards, but we also work with just concerned community members to support and amplify grassroots action. And you mentioned our fightforthefirst.org website. That platform specifically is a platform that is very powerful. It has a number of free tools, including petitions, events, space for discussion, resource sharing. It's really a place where people in the community who care about the First Amendment, who care about libraries, who care about access to information, and who care about legitimate governance of our public institutions can find each other and come together and amplify their message through petitions and through all sorts of grassroots efforts. And every library not only provides that platform for free, but we also help to amplify through digital marketing. We'll put money behind digital marketing as well as offer live one-on-one coaching and consulting. All of this is pro bono support that we're offering. So, and we're also working then with, you know, state library associations, individual librarians, sometimes whose jobs are being threatened, et cetera. We can help fundraise. We have helped fundraise in a number of instances. So really, any point in the spectrum where libraries are under some form of political attack, we are there to provide pro bono free support, regardless of whether you have a library degree or you're just a, or if you're a concerned parent in your community. We'll help you get organized and fight back.
And that Fight for the First campaign, that I think that also reinforces the idea too, that it's great to put your name on a petition that gets delivered to a library board or town council. But just like we saw in Glen Ridge, when a meeting where typically maybe a dozen, two dozen people show up, all of a sudden one night there's a couple of hundred people, that gets attention.
Absolutely right. And you know, sometimes people misunderstand the purpose of a petition. And there is, you know, there is the old standard, let's get a bunch of names and we'll print it out and we'll hand it to the legislator or the school board member and say, look, here's 1,000 people who have signed this. And that can have some sway. But a petition is also, you can think of it as like, it's a call out to, hey, to fellow community members, is this something that you care about? I care about it. If you care about it too, sign here, give us your name, your email, your phone number. And then now that we know how to contact you and we know that you care and we know that you're willing to take action because you signed the petition, we'll let you know, hey, Thursday night, there's a board meeting at the school or at the public library. Can you be there? And we'll even maybe set up an event page, right, so that you can register for the event and get automatic updates of, you know, here's where to be. We're going to meet in the parking lot. Everyone wear a blue shirt. Here's our talking points. And again, you can have 100 people show up where usually there's 3. So it's very, very powerful. You can, in a very short amount of time, you know, you can find other people who care, connect with them, coordinate. And you know, at the end of the day, it's about helping people to show up and speak up.
And every library has another platform as well as SafeSchoolLibrarians.org. Peter referred to librarians having their jobs endangered. Some cases, they're facing arrests because of the outrage, falsely based, that some people get because, again, like we said, some people can't get past the dust jacket before they start raising their voices. And also, as Peter pointed out, too, when parents and those who are in the community objecting actually read the material that they've been objecting to, some lines get changed rather quickly. Give you these websites again here, but of course we have them on our homepage as well, everylibrary.org, saveschoollibrarians.org, and fightforthefirst.org. We've been joined by the Associate Director of Every Library, Peter Bromberg. Peter, thanks for the backup that you're giving for the libraries and helping us understand their value, their importance in every community of every size. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Appreciate it.